This is Ed Werder, NFL reporter for ESPN and a 1982 graduate of the University of Northern Colorado. Hope you'll continue to listen to the award-winning Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
Ah, yes, Russell Wilson is no longer a Denver Bronco. And it wasn't that long ago we were talking to the guy we have on the First Advantage hotline right now about what that might look like for Broncos fans. A big story came out in the four-lettered network about how things kind of went down in Seattle. And so there was reasons to be concerned. This guy outlined that for us. Hugh Millen, football analyst for KJR in the Seattle market. And Hugh, my man, you know, I always love catching up with you on air, off the air, whenever. But I had to reach out to you because we're done. We're done with the Russ stuff just like that. It's over.
Yeah, Brady. Yeah, man. I remember back to those times. And, of course, I up in Seattle, I'm an analyst, and I studied all the Russell Wilson tape. So some of those conversations was like, you know, walking around eggshells, you know, because you don't want to, I mean, we talked about his strengths. His strengths were real. But then when you say, okay, these are the shortcomings, this is why Seattle likely made the decision, you know, then unfortunately for us Bronco fans, that came into evidence all too much.
And of course, Hugh Millen played for the Broncos for a bit during his NFL career. Hugh, those shortcomings we talked about, and again, so much has happened over the last 2 years. We started to see weird stuff, you know, high knees in the airplane, Wolverine blood, let's ride, all those things, the office he wanted, things like that. Were those kind of things going on in Seattle where fans were kind of like, he's kind of annoying, he's kind of all about himself, but he's winning football games, he's putting together big games, big numbers out there. Was that what we saw the last 2 years with the Broncos? Was that kind of what it was like in Seattle?
Well, I think he really changed. I think he was a kind of a humble third rounder when he came in, and we didn't see any of that stuff. There were certainly hosts on our radio station that by the end were saying, "Hey, you know, he's kind of douchey with some of this stuff," you know, it seemed like once he hooked up with Sierra that accelerated, you know, and just, you know, weird photos and a whole myriad of things. But I think some of our guys said, well, yeah, but he's our douchey, you know, because he was playing well. I think it probably undermined his capacity to be a leader. And I think, you know, there was a story that came out. I think it was Seth Wickersham may have been there, but there was an article, you know, is Russell Wilson black enough, you know, which is a sensitive topic. It's certainly sensitive for white people to talk about that. But I think my experience being around NFL locker rooms back around the league, you know, I think one of the great things about sports is that it does unite, and I think the players have respect for each other. It's kind of a meritocracy. You know, it's just the best, whoever the best players are going to play. And so watching how you know, all people can come together on a team is one of the fulfilling parts of being an athlete and being a sports fan, really, is to watch how that comes together. But, you know, there's in the socialization, I would say it's certainly an integrated locker room. But you'll see the brothers like to chop it up and how they do, and the white dudes kind of do it. And you know, there's still intermingling across it, but you know, there's a certain way. And Russ just had that kind of, I think, you know, there's a lot of the black dudes from the Seahawks who say Russ is kind of like an Urkel. You know, he just has an awkward way of getting along, and that was, I think, the thrust of the piece that asked what, you know, whether he's black enough. So I think that was all fine when you're winning, you know, but then when you lose, you know, that quirkiness becomes, now it's like, okay, the spotlight really shines bright on that. And you know, the salient part of that discussion is, okay, how is that going to affect his ability to lead his teammates? Because that's essential at that position.
Hugh Millen, quarterback, former quarterback, football analyst for KJR, covering the Seattle Seahawks, so covered a lot of Russell Wilson stuff over the years. Hugh, what do you know about the contract extension? There is a belief here in Colorado, because we're doing the poll question, which was worse, the trade or the contract extension? There is kind of a growing belief in Colorado that maybe those were one and the same, that in order for Russ to ultimately waive the no trade clause, he was going to waive that for a team that would agree to sign him for a contract extension. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think that's true. Mm. I think you know, yeah, Mark Rogers is agent. He's primarily a baseball agent. I don't even know if he has, maybe he's acquired some sense, but there was a time where his only football client was Russell Wilson. And I don't think he was concerned with the niceties and staying popular with the front offices of the various teams because of the next clients that he'll be representing. I think Mark Rogers was just kind of this, kind of a bulldog. Every contract negotiation with Seattle, it felt like that camp, the Rogers-Wilson camp, was going to extract every drop of blood out of the Seahawks. And they were going to, it generally followed an Aaron Rodgers contract within a few months after Aaron Rodgers' contract, if you just look at the timeline. And so they were always saying, well, Aaron Rodgers is getting this. And so, you know, and now you tell me, what football fan thinks that Russell Wilson, even at that time, deserves to be in the Aaron Rodgers class, you know, but that's what they did and that's what they were able to get. So I think they always played hardball, that, and I think that absolutely was a prerequisite. You know, that's an essential part of the story, is that he had the no trade, and for him to waive it, it had to be under the conditions that he wanted. And I think that they had to extract that concession.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, a lot of people are, you know, rioting in the streets today, Hugh, trying to get Broncos general manager George Payton, wondering why he has a job. And again, they go to that, but they also go to, I don't disagree with the trade because we were all excited about Russ, and we were. But the contract extension. But that's where I say, hey, you got to have it all. If you were excited about the trade, the only way you're getting him is if Russ is willing, or if the Broncos are willing to sign that contract extension. Was that the right move overall? Well, obviously now it's not. But I think to defend Broncos general manager George Payton for a second, if you were cool with the trade, then that was it, because the trade doesn't happen if Russ doesn't feel like he's going to be able to quickly sign over a contract extension.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that you weren't going to get Russ without the contract extension, for sure. There's a risk involved, obviously. There was some probability greater than zero and less than 100 that he'd be a bust. Whatever that probability is, we don't even really know. It might have only been a 1 in 5 probability he'd be a bust, and unfortunately, the 1 in 5 hit, you know. But I would say that we're all, you know, the fans that you're talking about, we're just sitting around and being fans and saying, okay, yeah, I've watched the Seahawks. I watched them in the Super Bowl against us. I know he's made some Pro Bowls. I watched him on Monday Night Football. Russell Wilson, yeah, he's really good to my knowledge. It's not the fans' job to see the future. It's the general manager's job to see the future. It was George Payton's obligation to look at Russell as a player, his age, his weight, the quirkiness of however he may have changed. He became a diva. If you did your homework, I mean, he really flipped, and you know, people on the inside in with the Seahawks just talked about how he became uncoachable. Like, he was supposed to know that, and he's supposed to see the future, because think of it like this, you know, players or general managers, if you if you hit on a guy and he's a lot, you know, you get a guy in the fifth round and he turns out to be a Pro Bowl player, well, everybody's going to sing your praises. And he didn't know when for example, Richard Sherman was a fifth rounder, Cam Chancellor, you know, I'm just talking about Seahawks, I'm trying to think of, you know, just examples. Those guys were multiple Pro Bowl players, maybe Hall of Fame players. And when you draft those guys and they play well, you get a lot of credit. And you say, man, you saw the future in that. Now, you'd say, well, if we'd have known he'd be that good, we'd have got him before the fifth. We wouldn't have waited to the fifth round. But I think that's the job. That's what the job is to assemble the team, have a picture of how is this player going to fit on our team in our locker room with our people doing our schemes, and see the future. The fans they see the past and they can kind of guess about the future. That's not their job. They don't work the 80 hour weeks to put the pieces together. And so I do think you judge general managers in all sports in that regard. And if you have a bust like this, that the idea of somehow lifting and absolving George Payton, I don't buy it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody says he deserves to be fired over that, I wouldn't argue with that for a second.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on all that, because when you look at it, the fans, media people, whatever, we all kind of just assume with a general manager that you are doing all the things that you just said. You're doing your homework. We know it's Russell Wilson. We know what we see on Sundays, and you know, we know what we've seen in the Super Bowl. We certainly know what we saw when Seattle dismantled the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl.
Right.
We know all those things. It's the general manager's job to go, hey, is that still the same guy? Is there, you know, exactly. did he get a new relationship that might have changed him a bit? Is he more of a diva these days? Is he still the same quarterback physically? Is he going to come into Denver with these ridiculous asks? Because when Seattle drafted him, he was, as you said, humble third-round guy. By the time the Broncos got him, he was on his way to the Hall of Fame. He's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. You know, he thinks he should be an MVP. So the Broncos got this quarterback that really, you know, changed mentally. And then, of course, we kind of saw physically, too, the last couple of seasons.
Yeah. You know, and I think the telltale back then was, and what we discussed is, okay, what are the reasons, you know, I laid it out. Look, I don't want to sound like I saw this coming. I don't think anybody saw this coming. But we talked about his attributes. What were his shortcomings? If now we say, what were the signs? What were the signs that could have and should have been reliable indicators of the future? Well, there was problems running the offense. I can remember, you know, I'll just give one example. They play a game against the Cowboys, the very first play of the game. They get in a trips left formation. They run a play called Y-Stick. And now football coaches out there that are listening, everybody knows what Y-Stick is. It's run at the college level. It's run at the pro level. It's run at the high school level. What it is think of three receivers to the left of the quarterback. The widest guy, we call number one, he runs a clear out. He runs a go route. And then number two, the middle guy, he runs a quick out to the flat. And then number three, who's the tight end, which football people call the Y, he runs a stick route. A stick route is like 5 to 7 yards, just go up, and there's kind of a man zone read to it that you can kind of hook it up if it's a zone. If it's man, you run away from it. It's just a little quick out route, five, six-yard out route. And the ball snapped. He's looking right at it. You can see from the end zone copy that there's no lineman in his vision. The tight end is wide open, and he just bails on the play. And he goes out to the right, and he loses ground. He's the pass rushes up the field, and he ends up having to throw it away out of bounds. I think was the result. And so now it's 2nd and 10, the second play of the football game. Well, you go back and you piece that together, and every single football guy in the universe, if they studied that, they would watch that. They go, "What the hell is he doing? The sun comes up, the rooster crows, you eat breakfast. There's a certain sequence to this. This is how you play the position. Like, you catch the ball, it's 1-2 rocker step, the first receiver's wide open, just hit him. This, you know, I coach high school football. If I had a ninth grade quarterback that didn't execute that, I'd be looking at him like, we got to talk. And so here, now you say, well, everybody can have a bad play. Hugh, you just described one play. I gave you an example of hundreds of plays. That, you know, you want me to draw up and, you know, describe different plays? No, because we got a one radio segment. But you get the point.
Yeah.
And so that that was an issue of just not executing the basic stuff. And then, of course, he was always, you know, at his heyday, he was electric. He was one of the best. He was arguably in the discussion as the best quarterback off script, but playing. I don't want to say above the X's and O's, because that implies that, oh wow, when things break down, he can make the plays. And yes, that's true. But I would say outside the X's and O's, because with him, that was the best way to describe it. He was outside the X's and O's because he wouldn't execute the X's and O's, and so now he wanted to play, playground ball, and just turn it into a scramble drill. Well, he was really good at that at one point, but then he got older and heavier, and he kind of lost the touch with that.
Wow, I love that too. Hugh, I'm up against a break, man. But we've got, you know, there's countless examples of that happened in Denver too. And it's hard to script for a guy that goes off script. That's a very difficult thing. Hugh, don't be a stranger, man. I love when we can catch up anytime. I love getting you on this show, man, and just picking your brain about all things football, because Lord knows you certainly know way more than I do.
Well, I always enjoy it, Brady. Call anytime.
Hugh, my man, appreciate you.
Hey. We'll get out of this mess. It'll be interesting to see how the draft goes or who the next guy is, but we'll get out of this mess.
Hey, and when we do, we're getting you back on. We're going to document that. Hugh Millen, appreciate you, man.
All right, Brady.
That's interesting. All right, let's take a break. We're up against the break. Hugh can go, and I love it. That's when you get radio guys on. It's the whole show powered by Chevron. We'll be right back.
To win $1,000 this year? Keep it here to find out how to enter KFKA's Bracket Challenge, presented in part by Summit Spas Windsor and Fort Collins.